Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus, on edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this preview edition as Minnesota starts Big Ten play this weekend on the road at West Lafayette against the Fighting Jeff Broms of the Purdue Boilermakers. But before we start to get into all that talk, a little bit of bye week talk, a little bit of recruiting talk, Luke, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, I think at this point, everybody kind of understands the bit now. The promo code is Lovey5. You can use that if you're not a member of the Goal Line Club. Head to their website, goalineclub.org, enter in Lovey5, and you're going to save $5 on a tailgate admission. The tailgate is elite, as Mr. PJ Fleck would say. Drinks, great food from Tony's Diner. I just don't know where else you'd want a tailgate. I understand that you might have your own tailgate, but if you want to be a lazy tailgater like myself, the Goal Line Club is the way to go. So again, Lovey5 will save you $5 at the checkout point at goalineclub.org. Okay, Mr. Burns, let's get into a few things before we get to our normal preview. I struggled with naming our last podcast. This was episode, I believe, 160. I named it Bye Week.
Very descriptive for people actually thinking about clicking on that and giving us their time of day, Luke. So I really greatly appreciate it, you trying to help out the download numbers.
And I recognize that the downloads are down a bit, but I think the response has been better than any episode we've had to date because we had Eric Vigo join us to talk about what's kind of happening around the athletic department. We've heard from a number of folks saying how much they enjoyed the conversation. I was surprised. I learned a lot from talking with Eric. I know you did as well. A very fun conversation. I think the one thing that was really neat was he was actually able to get some scanned ticket numbers, which he tweeted out the day that we actually posted the episode. And those were very, very interesting. You know, I laughed because there was a guy from your message board who was like, wait, so basically all I'm getting out of this is there were 100 more season tickets that were purchased from 2018 to 2019. And I get that, yeah, they won the Axe and yeah, they, you know, won a bowl game. But like, dude, look at the scanned ticket column.
Luke, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make a drink. I have been told that so many times in my life for different various situations, and I think this one is extremely applicable, where if you look at Eric Vigo's tweet and you look at, yes, the season ticket numbers, where Gopher football season tickets in 2017 around 22,000, in 2018 around 21,600, and this year they're around 21,700, so 21,700. Yeah, that's not great in terms of season tickets, but I think the larger point that people are missing, if you're not looking into the numbers there, is look how many people were actually scanning their ticket and in the stadium.
And let's just not, let's note that these are non-conference games. And
it's South Dakota State and Georgia Southern.
Right. And the fact of the matter is, like, we actually think these are fairly good teams that the Gophers beat. But
the casual fan wouldn't know that.
Right, exactly.
And so you look at the numbers, and in 2017, in Minnesota's first two non-conference games, 56,000 were scanned. So 56,000 between the two games were in the stadium, an average of 28,000 per game. In 2018, an average of 23,000 were in the stadium for the first two non-conference games. And then here in 2019, folks, I mean, the numbers don't lie, and the numbers tell us that 36,000, like 36,700 were actually in the stadium, which means that that's a lot of single game tickets. And that's where you remember back to that episode where, if you haven't listened to it already, I'd recommend pausing this one and going listen to Eric talk about it, where there has been a lot of single game ticket sales about 48 to 72 hours before the game. You know, folks want to see, is the product in the field worth it? What's the weather going to do? And I think the weather has largely helped a lot of people get in the stadium this year, as we've had two very beautiful non-conference games. It's looking like that Illinois game a couple weeks from now is going to be at least in the 60s still. And so the nice weather, and I mean, if you're getting 13,000 more people in the stadium, 14,000, you know, almost, than you did the year before, yes, the season ticket number overall isn't great, mm-hmm. but you're still getting, I mean, if you look at the, you know, you're still getting, what would that be, an extra 20? I mean, you're the math guy.
Looking at the numbers, but it's a meaningful, it's a significant number, right?
And I mean, you're going from like half full stadiums to like three-fourths full stadiums.
Right.
And they're announcing more than that, and they're selling more tickets than that. Like mm-hmm. they sold 90,000 tickets, and 73,000 showed up. Well, mm-hmm. the previous 2 years, in 2018, they only sold 79,000. And then 2017, they sold 86. I mean, you're selling more tickets. More people are coming. And so that's where I think the casual Gopher football fan is a very intrigued by year three under PJ Fleck. And for them to continue to be intrigued, Luke, I think that Minnesota's got to keep winning. And I think you'll see these ticket numbers with the various other things that Eric mentioned that they're trying to do to get people to come to games. It seems to be like the numbers are backing up what Eric was saying.
Yeah, and I think let's not underplay the role that the Gopher Athletics marketing department is doing in, you know, getting butts in seats and getting people to purchase tickets. I think that is driving a significant number of these tickets as well. I know we talked about that a lot in episode 160. So if people want to go back and listen to how they're doing that, absolutely do that. But I'll say it again, like, they're making efforts, and I appreciate it. And I have to think that those in attendance are appreciating it as well. And it's a good trend. And as you said, the product on the field is going to play a role in this, but it's not the only role to be played. So it will be interesting.
Yeah. And so I think, again, the larger takeaway is, if you're just going to glance at the numbers and give me some BS take about, well, they only sold 100 more tickets, Luke, this team sucks, the athletic department sucks, I mean, you just get out of here. Nobody's got time for you. Nobody's got time. And that's where they've got 37,000 on average in the stadium, which is up 14,000 from last year. What more do you want? I mean, we want that to get into the 40s consistently, and we want that to continue to remain that way as it gets into the colder late October, early November. But for that to happen, I still think that winning isn't everything, but winning surely helps.
All right, let's get to what may have triggered some of the message board folks with the commitment from a offensive tackle from the city of Lakeville to our neighbors on the east side of the Mississippi River.
Yeah, when we got news on Sunday, I believe, that Riley Malman, the top 2021 in-state recruit, so we're talking about a kid who is the top junior football player in the state of Minnesota, committed to Wisconsin after going and watching the Badgers dismantle Michigan this past weekend. And that's fresh off, he was at Minnesota for their win over Georgia Southern. And I think this is pretty simple, where Minnesota hasn't had an offensive lineman drafted since 2006. Wisconsin has had multiple first-round picks in the last few years. And I think it's really as simple as that. And if you don't really believe me, you can go check Riley Malman's parents' Twitters. I mean, that's where we're at in today's society with social media. His mom even retweeted my tweet saying that, where for Minnesota to change that offensive lineman leave the state, they got to put some guys in the league. And when the recruit's mom retweets that, do you think that might have played a part in their decision? So, I mean, it's just the reality for where Minnesota's at and where Wisconsin's at right now.
But is she verified as his mom? Do you know?
I can assure you it's his
mother.
Does
she have the blue check mark?
I don't even have the blue check mark. And oh, I got it's the worst anyways. So it's really as simple as Wisconsin's going to beat Minnesota in offensive line recruiting. I mean, it's just what it is until Minnesota's offensive line can turn things around. But in that same respect, Minnesota's going to beat Wisconsin for wide receiver recruits. You've even seen that with Daniel Jackson so far this year. So until the norms change, where Minnesota can get some offensive linemen into the NFL to try and convince some of these top in-state players like Riley Malman, Bryce Benhart, Quinn Carroll, it's just the reality where it's not an effort thing for PJ Fleck or Brian Callahan. They gave it their all. Riley had been on campus 6-7 times. But when you go to Wisconsin and you watch a game where Wisconsin's offensive line essentially dominates Michigan and you look at their track record, it's not tremendously connect the dots, people, where this is just what it's going to be. So Minnesota's got to, I don't anticipate PJ Fleck giving up on this, but in that same respect, I don't think that Riley Malman is really going to open things up.
I mean, at the end of the day, he may have just wanted to run power, right?
Riley Malman is a tremendously talented player, which is why we have him as the number one recruit in the state for the junior class. You just don't find kids that are tackle bodies like he is at 6'7", 270 pounds, and he's got really, really good side-to-side movement. I think he ran like a 4.5, 4.6 shuttle when he was at Minnesota at 6'7", 270 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a tackle body, but he's still going to be a projection where he needs to put on a lot of weight. He needs to put on a lot of strength, but just having those athletic tools like he does make him a guy that definitely has a NFL-type ceiling. So
I'm just going to start the rumor that he didn't want to run inside zone and he just wants to run power. That's what I'm going with.
An inside zone, but
what did you say?
I don't think the only person who wants to run inside zone as much as Kirk Shiraka does is Kirk Shiraka. That man loves inside zone, and I guess that's a good transition to get us into this Purdue podcast.
All right, so let's talk about the upcoming game against Purdue. This game will be at 2:30 in West Lafayette. So let's talk about when the Gophers are on offense. Purdue this season is giving up 30.7 points per game. They're giving up opponent yardage of 438 yards on average, 263 through the air, about 175 on the ground. So, Ryan, how much inside zone are we going to see this week?
Well, the question is, Luke, are we just going to forget about injuries on both sides of the ball, or are we just going to forget that?
Well, I forgot it.
Because I think there's a couple of pretty important guys on both teams that are either questionable
or
they're coming back.
You know, Sindelar, I think I've heard, is still in the concussion protocol. He's legit, so I'm curious, Ryan, where are they going to be at with him?
Well, that's the big question. Is Purdue's starting quarterback, Elijah Sindelar, is still in the concussion protocol as far as we know? And why that's important is because he suffered that concussion over 2 weeks ago. And as of Monday, when Jeff Braun met with the Purdue media, he was still in the concussion protocol. Now, I had this discussion today with Chip Scroggins of the Star Tribune while we were waiting for coordinators, and that, do you think that there's any chance that Jeff Braun is lying and that Sindelar is out of the concussion protocol?
Yes.
You do. And yes. Why do you think that? Because Chip and I were on the same wavelength, but I want to hear where you're at about it first.
Well, you know, he might not be getting an accurate depth chart from PJ Fleck. So, I mean, why not play games?
I just think that, and Chip and I agree on this, that brain injuries to me are just nothing to joke about in terms of
you're either in the protocol
or you're out of it. And the players read the media and the players read the social media. I mean, they know what he's saying to the media. And so if Elijah Sindelar has been cleared, why? And they'd be like, well, why is Why are you telling people he's still in the protocol? So
I think Brown might just dislike Fleck that much.
I mean, it's certainly possible, but I just think that it would just be a bad take on his part. But as far as we know, as of Monday afternoon, it's been over 2 weeks since Sindelar still in the concussion protocol. And that's scary because
for sure
he was close to getting cleared for the TCU game. And then he had a setback. And the fact that in those 10 days since that setback, he's still in the protocol. I mean, during the bye week, Minnesota was still practicing. Minnesota had practices Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I mean, you have an opportunity to clear whatever the hurdle was or get back to the hurdle that you needed to be. And the fact that he's still in it, that's a big, big deal. And so that's one of the biggest things I'm watching for, is because when Elijah Sindelar has been the quarterback for Purdue, Luke, do you know how many passing yards he's thrown for in two games this year?
Yeah, it's actually sitting up right in front of me, 932, Ryan.
The dude has thrown for an average of 475 a game. That's wild. Like, and he did that against a good Nevada team, and he did that against an SEC team in Vanderbilt. Like, this offense, this passing offense anyway, is so much different with him at the helm than redshirt freshman Jack Plummer. So we can get into that in a second here. But I also think we've maybe buried the lead here. You know who's back? Shannon Brooks.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see how they bring him back. I hope it's not like Indiana where they just said, okay, you're the feature running back. Here we go.
Yeah, that's not going to be the case this weekend, especially because Rodney Smith is back off his oblique injury per PJ Fleck. While Ibrahim is back from his undisclosed injury that kept him out of the Georgia Southern game. And then you get Shannon Brooks back. Now, the question is going to be, how do you divide carries? Man, I don't know.
I don't care.
That's a great question. In an ideal world, I think you'd give Rodney Smith 15, Mo Ibrahim 15, and maybe Shannon 6 to 8. I mean, Shannon needs to be here for the long haul if this team still is going to achieve the aspirations that they set out and the things that we predicted to start the year in that 8-4, 9-3 range where you're competing for Big Ten West titles. Now, I'm going to be very curious to see how many touches he gets, but I will also have people remember that 2015 game when he was a freshman against Purdue, he had some of the most – I mean, you remember those two runs that he had where he threw down that poor – I think the guy, the Boilermaker safety, number 4, gets his face planted into the ground twice. I mean, Shannon Brooks is such an elite running back where now you got Rodney and Mo. I mean, let's go with that inside zone. If we can't get inside zone going against a Purdue team that's already struggling to stop the run, that's going to be some major issues, Luke. But am I talking about the Gopher defense or the Gopher offense here? I forget which side of the ball.
Yeah, so I'll just rehash just some numbers here. Purdue gives up 30.7 points per game when they're on defense. They give up an average of 438 yards per game, 263 through the air, 175 on the ground. Case in point, this defense isn't anything special. They're not really looking to lock anybody down. They're just hoping they can outscore everyone.
That's essentially the biggest thing. And when you look at Purdue's run defense, why is it so bad? Well, it doesn't help that they lost their stud linebacker, Marcus Bailey, to an ACL tear, right, I believe, in their first game of the season. And then their stud defensive tackle, Lorenzo Neal, isn't expected back for this game either. So you're talking about a team that's lost their stud linebacker. They don't have their big defensive tackle in the middle. Well, yeah, there's going to be a reason an okay defense is now below average when your best players aren't playing. And that's where I'm going to be very concerned, that if Minnesota can't get their running game going against Purdue, and I understand it's a Big Ten team, I understand it's on the road, but this is a Purdue run defense that has been very leaky so far this year. Purdue's run defense to running backs alone is hemorrhaging 6.16 yards per carry. Now, we're talking about a Minnesota running offense that's averaging maybe 3, but this is Rodney Smith on fresh legs. This is Mo Ibrahim on fresh legs. And Shannon Brooks is very eager as well. And one of the biggest things we talked about 2 weeks ago, Luke, was that Bryce Williams had a tremendous amount of time or just a tremendous amount of issues seeing the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have faith that Rodney Smith, Mo Ibrahim, and Shannon Brooks are going to know how to read inside zone. Now, the other big question here, Luke, is PJ Fleck has alluded to this week that there may be some changes along the offensive line. Now, that tells me that John Michael Schmitz might be inserted into the game. The question is, hypothetically, who would he be replacing?
I gotta think Dunlop.
That was my first impression too. Especially when Derek Burns wrote that awesome piece on the O-line and what had been plaguing it. And I think he's right when he says the Minnesota's most consistent offensive lineman has been Sam Schluter. I mean, if you were to have told me that in mid-August, I would have just been blown away. But credit to Sam, the way he's been able to work. And I also think it says a lot about how consistent the rest of the offensive line has been. And so if Minnesota's right side of the offensive line continues to struggle, I think that Dunlap would be the first one potentially taken off the line. That would mean that you put John Michael Schmitz in at center, and then you move Connor Olsen to right guard. And then that's essentially the fix. So if inside zone can't get going here, with three running backs who are very good and a below-average run defense and maybe a below-average defense overall, there are going to be some much bigger issues than potentially losing this Purdue team if you can't get going with the personnel that you have.
So let me throw one question at you here before we run over to other parts of the offense. Do you think there is an opportunity that they'd actually move Blaze Andrews out to left tackle, move Sam Schluter back to right tackle, and actually maybe it's not Falalele?
It could be. I mean, I would think that if Fleck is talking about potentially inserting a different guy, it would have to be for Dunlap or Falalele.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking as well.
And if you're going to do that, and if you're going to take Daniel off, well, then that's what I would do. I would put John Michael Schmitz in at center. I would put Connor Olsen at left guard, Andrews at left tackle, and I would put Sam back at right tackle. Now, I would rather the offensive line just play well and we don't have to worry about any of that. But if the norm remains the norm where Minnesota's struggling to get pushed, Minnesota's struggling to pass protect, that's where I think you could see some changes in inserting John Michael Schmitz.
All right, so that makes sense. I guess maybe just quickly, what are we going to see from this Gopher offense this week? Are we going to see more inside zone, inside zone, inside zone, and then at the last minute we're going to throw the ball? Or what are you expecting?
I think that's a great question. And I say that because this Purdue offense on the flip side of the ball is just so damn explosive to where if Minnesota gets into a hole, 14-3, 14-0, 10-0, you just can't run inside zone 15 times in a row. I know that you'd like to if you're Kirk Shiroka to an extent to try and have those guys figure out their issues up front, but that's not conducive to a negative game script. And again, a negative game script, you're losing. It doesn't really benefit you to run the ball and drain the clock because that's just playing into your opponent's hand. So I think a large part of it's going to be, how does this game start? Does Minnesota get off to a fast start and they're up 10-3 in the first quarter? Does Purdue get off to a fast start? Do both teams get off to a fast start? I think there's going to be a lot of points in this game because Purdue's offense is just so explosive with Rondale Moore, who Joe Rossi today called arguably the best wide receiver in the country. And then we'll get into it a little bit here as well. They have some other playmakers on that outside that they're a very explosive team. Now, the big question mark for them is, once again, is it going to be Elijah Sindelar throwing them the ball? Or is it going to be Jack Plummer, who really struggled against a very good TCU team at home? I don't know, but I think that Kirk Shiroka, if anything, was made evidently clear today, and you can read his thoughts verbatim about what he thought about his Gopher offense coming off the bye week and their self-scout and all of that at gopherillustrated.com. It's free. He is very comfortable in his skin, and he's very comfortable that the offense works. It just has to get going. And I still think Minnesota is going to run inside zone far more than many of you listening really are going to like.
All right, so how about quickly we get in another ad for the Goal Line Club. For those of you who aren't aware, they're actually sponsoring our entire 2019 podcast season for Gopher Football. They've been a great partner for us, but they're also a great partner for Gopher Football. If you didn't know, the Goal Line Club runs events like their tailgate, which you can use the code LOVEY5 to save $5 on your ticket to their tailgate. The proceeds of that tailgate go back to Gopher Football, and it's not like they're trying to buy like pinball machines and all this for the athletes. They're buying things like coats for when families come and visit from places that maybe don't need coats and all sorts of other things. It's a really good way to support Gopher Football, is just supporting the Goal Line Club in general.
And it for that tailgate coming up here for the Illinois game. I just looked at the long range forecast for it. Folks, it looks beautiful. 60 degrees and sunny. I mean, that's where I thrive.
Is it
a Minnesotan born and bred, 60 degrees for a high? You know what that means, Luke? That means sweatshirt and shorts weather. That is absolutely where I thrive. And if it's going to be sunny and 60 on an October day, everyone listening to this knows as well as I do, the Minnesota fall weather can change in a dime from second summer to 1 week of fall to here's winter, everybody. So if you're not taking advantage of this and coming to the tailgate, Luke and I will be there. You can enjoy some very nice beverages that are very strong if you're okay with that. And then Tony's Diner is also the one catering. So if you want some good food, if you want to enjoy a 60-degree fall day where Minnesota should beat up on an Illinois team, the promo code is LOVEY5.
All right, so let's talk about when the Gophers are on defense. You alluded it to already. Purdue is not without elite athletes, especially Rondell Moore. I think arguably Rondell Moore is my favorite Big Ten my favorite Big Ten player. But when you look at when Purdue is on offense, they're averaging 28.7 points per game. They're averaging 420 yards of total offense, 375 of that through the air, and just a meager 50 yards on the ground. I would like to note that their leading rusher has 31 carries on the season for 91 total yards.
Not great, Luke. Not great.
No.
What you need to know about this Purdue offense is they are a pass funnel, which means they literally can't run the ball. Now, it's a combination of their offensive line isn't very good, and that's something I talked about with a Purdue beat writer, of which we'll have his thoughts on Purdue up on tomorrow morning on Gopher Illustrated if you want to go read what he thinks about this game. And then I was also on some Purdue radio stations this week, and I even asked them, like, what do you think about the offensive line? And they've all said, meh. And the other one said, average to below average. So if you have an average to below average offensive line and you have a running back unit, which on the year, Luke, Purdue running backs have 48 carries. 48 carries. Now, guess how many total rushing yards they've gained on those 48 running back carries?
Well, if they're averaging 50, they've played three games. I'm going to go for 150 yards.
128.
Wow.
They are averaging a balmy 2.66 yards per carry with their running backs. They just can't run the ball. And why would they want to run the ball when you have Rondale Moore, you have David Bell, you have some other guys like Bryson Hopkins, Ahmad Anderson. I'll get into the statistics with them here in my keys to the game, but this is a very explosive team. This is an explosive team that has 27 pass plays of over 15-plus yards on the year. That's pretty good, and that's where Joe Rossi talked about today. The biggest thing he's trying to do this week is limit the big plays. He wants Purdue to force themselves to drive on Minnesota, whether it's 8 plays, 10 plays, 12 plays. Make Jack Plummer or Elijah Sindelar sustain a drive quarter after quarter after quarter, and that's where I feel like if Minnesota can make Purdue do that and not have a 2-play 75-yard drive, a 3-play 80-yard drive, if Minnesota can just limit the big plays, of which we've – I don't know for how many years we've been saying that in Big Ten play where Minnesota then comes out flat to start Big Ten play, Luke, but if they can limit Rondale Moore, and he's going to get his touches. He's going to get his 8, 10, 12 touches a game, but if you can turn 10 touches into 95 yards and no scores, that's a hell of a job containing a great player like Rondale Moore. But Minnesota's got to stop the running game and get themselves into passing down situations where you can get Boye Mafe on the field. You can get Carter Coughlin. You can get Asezie Otemiwu. You can get Keontae Shad, and you can show different looks to an offensive line that's already struggling where if you have one down lineman and you're showing six at the line, they're not going to know who to block. And if they're thinking, thinking offensive lineman is not a quick offensive lineman, and that's how you can get sacks, pressures, and turnovers.
All right, so I guess the one thing that I wanted to touch on, I don't know if you have this stat. I'm actually trying to look it up. Do you know how many what percentage of the time they're targeting Rondale Moore?
I do not. Okay. Not off the top of my head. I do know that he's on average this year, he's averaging per game 9 receptions for 123 yards. Now, they are targeting him a lot. I think it's probably a 30-35% target share, which is approaching Tyler Johnson levels from last year.
Mm-hmm.
But they are mixing in other receivers.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And those guys are actually quite good as well. I know you noted that as well. So before we get into the keys, not your keys to the game, but we look at kind of the specifics to this game, I want you to talk a little bit about the redshirt freshman quarterback. I don't know anything about him, quite frankly. And we know that Sindelar is pretty good, but, you know, what can we expect from the redshirt freshman?
He's just an experience. He hasn't played. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that's where Elijah Sindelar has the experience. He's played. He's been under the system with Jeff Brom, where Jack Plummer's just a redshirt freshman who's played in one game, and that was against a very good TCU defense. Now, TCU didn't show up last week against SMU, but this was a TCU defense that played really well in West Lafayette that night. They limited him to under 50% completion percentage with two picks. And he was still, I mean, you look at 13 completions for 181 yards, you're averaging, if my University of Minnesota edumacation is correct, somewhere around like 13, 14 yards per catch. So this is a vertical offense. It's still going to be a vertical offense. And I asked Joe Rossi that question today, was how much does the offense change if it's Elijah Sindelar versus Jack Plummer? And his answer was it didn't. From what we saw on tape, they did the exact same things in terms of the overall process. They're going to do some things side to side in the short to intermediate game, but ultimately they want to stretch you vertically. And Jack Plummer's not afraid to push the ball vertically, and that's where you're hoping that, I mean, I've talked up this Gopher cornerback room here for three games. I think that's my biggest thing that I'm excited to see in this game is Keandre Thomas and Coney Durr and Terrell Smith and Benjamin St. Juice, Antoine Winfield and Jordan Howden, they're going to get tested. This is as good of a skill position wide receiving core as Minnesota is going to see all year. And I think Minnesota's improved on this side of the ball, and they're going to have a chance to show that on Saturday afternoon.
Okay, so yeah, this game is Saturday afternoon at 2:30 p.m. in West Lafayette. It is on ESPN2. ESPN actually has this in their FPI as 61.2% in favor of the Gophers. That's more or less a pick'em with a slight favorite to Minnesota. The betting numbers on this are the Gophers currently, from what I can see, I don't know if you saw where it started, Ryan, but right now it's a minus 1.5 for the Gophers, so they're favored by 1.5. The over-under is 55 for this game. Do you actually know what it started at?
Yeah, Minnesota Open is a one-point favorite. Okay. I'm on Vegas Insider right now, and it's at consensus is minus one, but the over-under for this game has gone up 3.5 points.
Okay.
So, the public or the money is betting on this being a very high scoring game.
Yeah.
For Big Ten standards anyway.
Yeah. And if we look at the weather specifically for this game in West Lafayette, looks like around kickoff it'll be about 80 degrees, moving its way up throughout the game into the kind of mid 80-ish. It'll feel like the humidity will be at 62%, dew point 66, 8-mile-an-hour wind to the south. Not a huge chance for rain, but it looks like a pretty warm fall afternoon day in West Lafayette.
And that's where I think folks are discounting Purdue here, thinking that, well, Joe Rossi shut him down last year. Why can't he do it 2 years in a row? Well, folks, if you remember last year, it was like 15 degrees and snowing. Purdue wanted nothing to do with that weather.
Right.
Now they don't have to travel. They get Minnesota at home and it's 60, 70 degrees warmer. This is going to be there is no excuses for Purdue this time around. There's no cold. There is no traveling on the road. There's no snow. It's an even playing field for them. Their skill position players are going to be ready to go.
All right, Ryan. So just real quick, who is sponsoring your keys to the game today?
Who is sponsoring my keys to the game today is the Burge Insurance Agency. And they know that the odds of being able to save every client close to $1,000 a year on their homeowner's insurance or $3,000 a year on their work comp premiums is about as equal of a chance as Minnesota going undefeated this year. But that's what happened last week at the Burge Insurance Agency. They had referrals come through into their office last week, and voila, you know what happened? They saved a client $1,000 a year on their homeowner's insurance, and they saved another client $3,000 with their business. Now, if you think that you don't need to save yourself thousands of dollars a year and you don't think that you want to take a second look at your insurance policy, well, then this isn't for you. But if you want to have someone take a second look and get a free quote on your insurance policy, whether it's your personal, whether it's your boat, whether it's your ATV, whether it's your business, check out insurancebyburns.com. They would love to help you out.
All right, Ryan. So going into this game, this will be the third Big Ten season for PJ Fleck. Did you know that he has not yet won his opening Big Ten game?
It doesn't surprise me. Last year was, has it been Maryland the last 2 years?
So let me check. So 2017, yeah, both years, Maryland. In 20,
freaking Maryland team.
Yeah. In 2017, this was at home. They lost 24-31. And then let's see, in 2018, again, it was Maryland on the road, and they lost, oh, yeah, that was the 42-13 where, you know, Maryland didn't even need to enter the red zone to score.
Maryland scored 42 points without running a single red zone play. One of my favorite breakdown podcasts with Derek Burns.
Yeah, absolutely. That was pretty good. So that's actually a good point. Derek Burns will be joining us for the breakdown of this upcoming game. So
it's been too long. He did confirm with us via carrier pigeon, just the way that we have to communicate with Derek. It's smoke signal. It's carrier pigeon. It takes a few days to get to him. He confirmed with us he is going to be back on the breakdown podcast. And I know that Luke and I are ever so excited to be getting some more in-depth X's and O's with you guys.
All right, so let's get to your keys to the game, Ryan.
So my biggest key, or my number one key, I should say, is limit explosive passing plays, because I talked about this earlier. Purdue's passing offense is going to be something unlike Minnesota has seen so far this year. The Boilermakers have 27 explosive passing plays, and I define an explosive passing play as a 15-yard completion or more. So that's 27 of those in just three games. And Elijah Sindelar, if he does end up playing, had 24 of those alone. So the offense with Elijah Sindelar is averaging 12 explosive plays a game, and that's just with his arm. So they have the playmakers on the outside, if that hasn't been clear enough already. Rondale Moore being the headliner. Everyone saw his sensational freshman season last year. Well, what's he doing so far for his sophomore slump? Well, there is no slump. He's averaging 9 receptions for 123 yards per game. Now, don't sleep on the other receivers that Purdue has. Their next two leading receivers are kids by the name of Bryson Hopkins and Ahmad Anderson Jr. Both of them only, quote-unquote, only have 13 receptions on the year, but they're both averaging north of 12 yards per completion, so it's going to be a vertical passing game. And then they have a true freshman four-star by the name of David Bell, who's a bit banged up right now. I do believe he's going to be back for this game. And he's averaging north of 20 yards per completion. So if I haven't stressed this already, this is going to be as vertical of a passing game as Minnesota has seen so far this year. And it's going to be a big test for Joe Rossi. Now, everybody remember how Rossi shut down that Purdue offense last year in that cold, snowy game at TCF Bank Stadium, limiting the Boilermakers to 10 points in a very nice, Luke, 6.9 yards per catch.
Right.
Now, I don't expect it to be that easy for Joe Rossi 2 years in a row, especially when it was, as we mentioned, 20 degrees and snowing in November last year. Now it's still in September, and it's going to be in the 80s. Purdue has no excuse, especially because they're at home. So far in 2019, Luke, Joe Rossi's defense has given up how many explosive plays through the air?
Three?
16.
Oh, I'm close.
I looked that up today, and I was like, that surprises me. What in the world? 16 explosive passing plays of 15-plus yards. Now, they're all essentially in that 15 to 25-yard range where, yes, it's a big gain, but no, it's not taking the top off for a 50, 60, 70-yard score.
So how many – do you have the breakdown by game by chance?
It's funny you mention that because Fresno State had 8 of those alone.
Okay,
but their longest in that game was a 25-yarder.
Okay.
So they had 8 passing plays between 15 and 25 yards. And that's where Fresno State exploited Minnesota's zone coverage play after play after play. Now, Minnesota's secondary and pass coverage has played well overall when they've been asked to go man, but it's going to be a very big test for this cornerback room this weekend. So Joe Rossi is going to have to get after the Purdue quarterback, whoever that is, and force them into some bad decisions. Because if you're able to get them into passing down situations and you're able to get Boye Mafe, Asezio Tomiwu, Carter Coughlin, and the rest of that passing down unit onto the field, you know, Purdue literally can't run the ball. So you should be in those situations, and those guys are going to have to get home. And if they don't get home, they have to force pressure and make the quarterback make a bad decision, and hopefully those lead to turnovers. Because we mentioned Purdue running backs have 48 carries on the year for 128 total yards. That is 2.66 yards per carry with zero rushing touchdowns. Now, make no mistake, this Purdue offensive line, just they live and they die with the passing game. So if Minnesota can stop the run and get after the quarterback, Purdue's offensive line is a question mark. They were a question mark, and they still are going into this 2019 Big Ten play. Now, my number two key, Luke, is they have to get the running game back in gear. Because if the Gophers can't get a running game going this week, the concerns for the Minnesota Moving Company are just going to be through the roof. Now, Kirk Schrock is going to get his top three running backs back healthy. Rodney Smith's back from that oblique injury per PJ Fleck. So is Mo Ibrahim off of his undisclosed injury that kept him out of the Georgia Southern game. And then it's the 2019 debut for Shannon Brooks off his ACL from last year. Now, all three running backs, in my opinion at least, have shown that in Big Ten play, they just need a sliver of room to work with, and this offense can really hum. The other big reason for optimism that Minnesota's running game can get going outside of their running backs returning is that the Purdue run defense has been, we'll say, very leaky so far. To running backs alone, the Purdue Boilermaker defense is hemorrhaging, as I mentioned earlier, 6.16 yards per carry to running backs, and it was even worse in their last game against TCU, where running backs in West Lafayette rushed for 318 yards. Now, Purdue lost their stud linebacker to an ACL tear in Marcus Bailey. Their stud defensive tackle in Lorenzo Neal isn't expected back for this game as well. So this Purdue defense can be exploited on the ground. For that to happen, the Minnesota Moving Company, a.k.a. the Gophers offensive line and tight ends, have to get this inside zone running game going. No more miscommunications on stunts and twists. You have to get a hat on a hat. And most importantly, communicate. Communication is so key in many different areas of our lives, Luke, but no more key than in a zone running scheme. You're blocking an area, not necessarily a man. So if your man leaves a zone, you have to communicate to the man next to you that, hey, somebody's coming, and he'll be able to tell you, okay, I'm going to pass off. So you have to communicate that to the man next to you and expect that another guy is coming to come back into your zone. Minnesota's physicality up front also has to improve as well. We need to see a bigger push, because if you can grind down this Purdue defense, they will give up second half points. Do you have a guess as to how many second half points Purdue has given up in three games so far this year?
No, I literally have no idea, but I know it's got to be big, because didn't Nevada come back from down like 21 or something?
Purdue blew a 3-score second half lead to Nevada, and that's where you saw their kicker hit like a 56-yarder to win it, which hashtag college kickers, but Purdue has given up 62 second half points. That's an average of around 21 per game. So this is a Purdue defense that's going to give up points, especially in the second half. So with Ibrahim back, Smith back, Brooks back, all are expected to get touches in this game. That alone should be able to improve this Minnesota running game with their vision in this zone blocking scheme. But to take it to the next level, and for this offensive line has to change their best. Out of a bye week, and Luke, for my final key, we're going to go to your specialty, and that's special teams. Because special teams have to be special here. It's incredibly difficult to win on the road in the Big Ten with poor special teams, but that's what Rob Wenger's unit has been overall here in 2019. Now, ESPN's FPI ranks Minnesota's special team as what the X most efficient out of 130 FBS teams, Luke?
No, I got nothing.
123rd out of 130 FBS teams, and S&P Plus, our lovely Bill Conley, has his statistics rank Minnesota as the 102nd best special team unit. So if you're going to have a coach solely dedicated to special teams at the collegiate level, things have to improve drastically.
Right.
And for this week specifically, in a hurry. Now, Jacob Herbers hasn't allowed a punt return yet. That's great. Minnesota's played three games. But it's been a combination of his kicking style plus Tyler Newbin and Benjamin St. Juste as gunners have been awesome.
Yeah.
The issue is Jacob Herbers is averaging 38 net yards per punt. That's not exactly flipping the field, because on those 10 punts, you know, if you're thinking, okay, he's got a 38 average, that's not good, but at least he's putting it inside the 20, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. Of his 10 punts this year, Luke, how many have been inside the 20?
I think two.
Three.
Oh.
So 30% of your punts with a 38 net average have been inside the 20, and he has one over 50. So things need to improve for him in Big Ten play. Now, the field goal unit had a catastrophic error last week when, instead of going up two scores with 6 minutes left, the free runner came right up the middle, blocked the kick, and it went from Minnesota taking 11
points. Could have been a penalty. Could have been a penalty.
It's, I mean, we talked about that. It's 50. I don't even know if it's 50-50. It could have been, but I think it's debatable. So instead of up 11 points, you're now calling another timeout on a two-point conversion to try and not have the game tied. Plus, I mean, talk about a momentum changer. That can't happen again on the road to potentially give Purdue extra life. The kickoff unit hasn't been stellar. Grant Reirse, Lord bless his heart, hits one out of bounds at the worst possible time against Georgia Southern with less than a minute left on the clock after Minnesota scores. And then you'll remember back to the South Dakota State game where South Dakota State had two long returns in that game, giving them fantastic field position, including a return touchdown called back on what I thought was a pretty ticky-tack holding call. So too many issues have been arising with this Gopher specialist unit in the non-conference that has to be cleaned up out of the bye.
All right, so I do want to touch on just a couple things here real quick before we close out and get your prediction. I did mention, you know, PJ Fleck has not won a Big Ten opener. This being his third year, he's never won a September Big Ten game. So I am interested to see if he can get off that schneid and get an opening Big Ten win, you know, instead of starting with some positive momentum. Additionally, I did want to touch on special teams a little bit. You mentioned it; they've struggled quite a bit. But I think the one thing, coverage units in particular, I know that they haven't returned one on punt, but kick return coverage has been just putrid at times. And quite frankly, they probably should have given up a touchdown the one time. That is an area that they're going to have to improve, especially with dynamic playmakers like what Purdue has. You know, what's to stop them from putting Rondell Moore back there, right? And he is arguably as good as it gets in terms of giving that guy space, which just leads me to my third point. I really, really, really think that it comes down to tackling in space. I don't know if the Gophers have been put in that situation a ton. We've seen improved tackling in space from the safety position in particular. And I think that we're going to have to see that this week in particular with how they're going to try to stretch the field horizontally, sideline to sideline. Got to tackle well in space, and that is going to be my biggest key to the game this week.
I think I might go with special teams just because.
Yeah.
I mean, I hadn't even looked, and Rondale Moore is the punt returner and the primary kick returner. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there was ever a game Rondale Moore was going to break one, the way that Minnesota's kickoff unit has been performing, I mean, I really hope that Rob Wenger's got things cleared up. But yeah, I mean, if it's not going to be trying to tackle Rondale Moore on special teams, boy, oh boy, you better tackle him between the 20s or else he is going to turn an 8-yard gain into a 98-yard gain.
Mm-hmm. All right, so real quick, your prediction, Ryan.
So I'm not sure we're going to get word on quarterback Elijah Sindelar's status prior to kickoff on Saturday. But as of Monday, he's still in the concussion protocol. It's significant because it's now been over 2 weeks since his initial diagnosis, which should immediately raise a red flag for you. Still not being cleared following a bye week makes me think he is, in every sense of the word, questionable for this game this weekend. The offense, while schematically looked the same, was a much different animal with redshirt freshman Jack Plummer back there. So a lot of this is going to be predicated on what Boilermaker quarterback is on the field on Saturday. But I think that this game is going to see a lot of points, and I think that's why you've seen Minnesota's over-under here go up. Purdue's going to pass the ball whether they're up 17 or they're down 17. We've talked about that. They legitimately cannot run the ball to save their lives. That's a Jeff Brohm offense. And so Minnesota's going to have a chance to take the air out of the ball. That's what they want to do. But I think that the combination of an explosive offense for Purdue with a below-average defense for them and Minnesota having three of their top running backs back for this game, I just think is going to be a big boost for points. The returns of Smith, Brooks, Ibrahim, plus a below-average run defense lead me to believe that Minnesota is going to get their run game going somewhat here. And ultimately, I think this is a Tanner Morgan leading another fourth-quarter comeback drive for Minnesota to take the lead before Carter Coughlin has a strip sack fumble and he He puts the game away on ice. In West Lafayette, Jeff Brohm gets even more pissy at P.J. Fleck because Jeff Brohm just can't stand P.J. Fleck for whatever reason. We didn't really talk about this, but...
I tried to get you going, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't take the bait for once, which that'd be a first for me. I don't really know the reason why Jeff Brohm hates P.J. Fleck so much, but folks, it's a real thing. I don't know if it's because they were both hired in the same coaching cycle. I don't know if it's because Brohm thinks PJ's personality is fake. I don't know what the deal is. Or it might be because Minnesota kicked Purdue's teeth in last year and that didn't sit well with him. But I'll just tell you that any coach that goes and watches a Purdue practice, Jeff Brohm will just bring up PJ Fleck to them, whether they're associated with Minnesota at all or not. I mean, I know coaches, college coaches throughout the Midwest, and they'll just text me like, hey, just watched a Purdue practice. Say they're an FCS coach. Why did he bring up P.J. Fleck to me? And I'm just like, dude, I don't know, but that dude's got some issues in terms of why he thinks about P.J. Fleck so much. So I think Carter Coughlin's strip sack ends this game. Minnesota 31, Purdue 28.
All right, so I texted you earlier today, and I said over under 55. That shocked me, and now you tell me the betting money is about as smart as me.
Well, I've been getting in a lot of trouble with the people who bet a lot more money, / they actually bet money on college sports, since I can't do that. Just because the public has a lot of money on something doesn't mean it's the smart money.
Sure.
So what the public thinks is that there's going to be a lot of points in this game.
Yeah.
That's where the money's coming in right now.
And you were very vocal in that. In the Georgia Southern game.
Don't listen to me because apparently I know nothing.
Yeah. So I expect this to be a fairly high-scoring game. I do expect the Gophers to come out. I do think it's going to be close, though. I will go 35-31 in favor of the Gophers.
66 points, and I got them at 59. I do think that, as we kind of close things out here, Luke, if Minnesota can't get the running game going, I am going to be... Number one, I'm going to be furious.
Yeah.
Number two, I'm going to be very curious to hear what Derek Burns thinks in terms of this specific game and why it happened. Now, I'll watch the film just like he will, but he's so much more of a smarter football mind overall, and especially on the offensive line. And I think most people here know the thing that's plagued Minnesota most is the moving company up front between the offensive line and tight end. So I'm really hoping Minnesota goes for over 200 rushing yards, maybe 3 rushing touchdowns. And we don't have to worry about that. And we're celebrating a Big Ten win and breaking it down. But I think this is going to be a tough game. Vegas thinks it's a tough game as well. So Purdue is actually favored by 2. I mean, in terms of minus 1. Maybe I got that wrong. I think I got that wrong. I'm a bot. Listen to me.
Minnesota is actually favored by 4, right? So
yes, that would be... the instance
four,
there.
Four and a half.
I think the smart money this year would be whatever Minnesota's favored by, you take the other team. So
yeah, right.
You would take Purdue plus 1 here.
Yeah, and that is true. I think I should see against the spread how each team is doing. The Gophers are 2-1 against the spread. Purdue is 2-0 against the spread. Or sorry, 1-2 against the spread.
So in that instance...
I misquoted. The Gophers are 0-2-1 against the spread, and Purdue is 1-2-0 against the spread.
So neither team does well against these Vegas lines. So
no.
We'll see how it plays out this weekend. But again, can special teams stop Rondale Moore? Can Minnesota tackle well in space? And offensively, can you get the running game going, which will only give Rashad Bateman and Tyler Johnson more space to work?
All right. So, again, we want to thank everybody for listening. We appreciate our sponsors, the Burns Insurance Agency and the Goal Line Club. Again, thank you for listening, and go Gophers.